25 years of doing community development and community organizing, sometimes together, sometimes separate. So we've been talking a lot about building and connecting community based on the community's assets and what they have to offer, instead of what the community is missing. Just the same way we would like people to deal with us individually, not start with what's wrong with us or what we don't know or have, but start with what we do know and what's good about us and work from there. So, but there's no way you can do community work and or create change without work dealing with power, which is the focus of tonight's session. So when you hear power, what do you think of?
Money. Ability to make decisions.
Money. Ability to make decisions.
Control.
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 Force.
Force.
Influence.
Influence.
Abuse.
Abuse.
Abuse. Abuse.
Oh.
Happens. And what experience, for those of you that said abuse, what experiences or things that you've read made that come to mind?
Corporate
power.
Banking.
Okay.
Just a lot of the recent news.
Right. So using power to move more ahead on profits at the neglect of safety and some other things.
More on the greed side.
Yeah, you know, power corrupts, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolute power corrupts, absolutely.
Yes.
Which
there's a tendency towards that.
There is a tendency, which is actually what Lord Byron actually said, which is power corrupts and absolute power can corrupt absolutely.
Really?
Yeah. But we, you know, abbreviated.
I never heard that.
They have to know the can was in there.
He gets it, gets out.
Yeah.
We get concerned about corruption. And what experiences lead to those concerns?
I think you hear about it a lot in the press. I mean, I mentioned the other night, you know, some of the many governors and different elected officials who've been found wanting in the area of ethics, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And they always get frontline news. I mean, because you never hear about the hardworking elected officials who are 98% of the folk who are really working hard and doing their best. But we don't hear about those.
Yeah, not a lot of coverage of the little congressman from Arkansas who helped get 300 jobs. What about people who said like influence or ability to do things? What experiences have you had that made you think of that?
Any type of a business that contributes to politicians.
Oh, okay.
Would have influence.
Has some power.
Yes.
Yeah. Down to a legislative session, then you go into the fifth estate or fourth estate, whatever it is, who the lobbyists are, and the people who can afford to hire full-time lobbyists and that sort of thing can have more contact with elected officials one-on-one than people who do not have power.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Unless they too organize, and that's the secret.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, in its purest form, lobbyists contribute so they can have access, so they can have the conversation. There's only so many people a person can see in a day. But sometimes it extends beyond that. So we talked about power a lot in this like big macro sense about people that aren't in this room. Do you experience power in your everyday life? Or lack of power in your everyday life? If so, where?
You know, I experience mostly lack of power. I will write my congressman, and of course my congressman is the other end of the spectrum for me. So he says, thanks for writing, but you're wrong, and you know, anything I can do for you, write me again. And, you know, I know that next time I write him, he's going to say the same damn thing. And round and round we go.
So you write letters.
Yep. And don't do me any good.
You can come to tomorrow night's session, community organizing. Talk about why those letters are minimal value. They're not of no value. But yeah, you didn't have any power in that situation.
I think another way you can have power, I know in my city, if you are able to pack city hall chambers with people of like minds when they are discussing a topic that they feel strongly about, you definitely have power and influence. Seen it happen
several times. Yeah, but definitely at that very local level.
At a very local level, I think people don't really appreciate the influence they can have on the very local level.
Power. My first community organizing job was on the southwest side of Chicago, and it was with 8 congregations. So it was all church based, and. This word made people squeamish, but to do what they wanted to do, they were going to need some of this. It was primarily Latino, first and second generation immigrants, and long time Eastern Europeans, steel workers at best, in terms of economic status. So they wanted to improve their neighborhood, but they were easily neglected, so they were going to need power, so we had to work with that concept. And so it was all church folks, and there was some discomfort with it. In the church, we have that a lot, but not just in the church. Why is that? Why do we have discomfort with power?
Because we're afraid of those who do have it.
Okay.
Afraid we'll be like them.
Afraid of people who've had power and
abuse it.
And
afraid we're going
to want to become like that. That's healthy.
It was community development. You had those years in Alaska. His views on
which in particular?
A larger community development. And in the Chicago area, if I'm not mistaken.
It's very clear that. In the back of the yards where Upton Sinclair's Jungle is written, that if they wanted things to be different, to get the attention of the daily administration, they're going to need some of this.
Well, I think, too, if you admit that you have power, then you have to accept that you have responsibility.
That's problematic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, every parent knows that. Sudden became a demigod, you know. I have so much control over this thing, and the responsibility burden is huge. So we get squeamish because we've seen it abused. We get uncomfortable because we see it as something that's out there for other people. But it's something that electeds and lobbyists and people in the political realm work with. Definitionally, it's simply. The ability to act. That's all it is. Spanish is great for power because their word is poder, which is nice because it's both a noun and a verb. So it means power and it means to act. So yo puedo, I'm able to. And that's used equally for I'm able to vote to I'm able to pass you the sugar. Same word. Okay. No extra baggage. So one of the things I like to do is have people think about power as just this, the ability to act. Now, how many of you have power?
We all do.
Yeah. How many of your congregations have power? I'm a little less enthusiastic about it. Depends if we're fighting. time and still, at some level, the word empower is, has sort of been invoked to empower people, which means to give people the power to act on their own. I never fully liked that term because it sort of implied that the power was given, which also means I can take it away, right? This is, like at local government levels, this is practiced with advisory commissions, right? You know, put you four on the advisory commission because we're friends or neighbors or whatever, but wait a minute, you're going somewhere I don't want to go, so I'm going to put somebody else on. So I'll empower you, but I can unempower you. So I like to think about releasing power. It presumes that we have power, that we are children of God, that we have ability, we can act, and that especially in community with other people, we can connect and organize in a way that we can have influence on our surroundings. Maybe not the influence that Congress has, but certainly a lot of influence over our immediate surroundings. And I like this, to talk about this, because it means that we have to look inside ourselves first. Instead of looking at people with power out there, look first here and say, what do I got? What can I bring to the table that can help us accomplish what we want to accomplish? So, this is where I'm going to give you two Solominsky things, one I'm going to agree with and one I'm going to not. The thing I disagreed with a lot of my friends who have come out of the MSC organizations is that a lot of times they organize people to get power to act the way they want them to. You know, not a bad thing. You're trying to do that when you write the congressman. Get them to do that. So they're teaching people how to get existing power to act the way we want it to. The problem I have with that is it's only half the equation. It ignores power people can create on their own. So when I work with a lot of communities I work with, one of the things that comes up a lot is their park is neglected. Fairly common. By neglected, you know, there's graffiti, bathrooms are a mess, benches might be kind of broken. Nobody wants to go there. Grass doesn't get cut on a regular basis. It's not not a friendly place. Water fountains usually don't work. And people will talk about, you know, what they tried to do, you know, worked with their council member to get attention on the park. They, you know, wrote letters to the head of the parks department. Again, trying to get the people who have the authority and power to do something about it, to do it. Which sometimes works, sometimes doesn't. Usually by the time they've called me in, it hasn't worked. And so I'm like, well, we could keep doing that, and you don't need me, and your park won't get better. Or we could think about what we want the park to be and start taking the dreams of the neighborhood around the park for that park, see what they want it to be, see who's got skills, who knows carpentry, who can paint, you know, who can dig up weeds and plant good stuff, who knows gardening, who would be willing to organize a community garden. Get all that together, then you just go do it. Especially in these times when local government is so strapped, chances are they won't notice for a long time. But even before then, when people would go do that, as soon as something good starts happening, run down decaying park starts to brighten up with colors and usable features, the head of the parks department and the council members show up very quickly. Right? Nope, they don't want people to get ahead of them. What those folks have done is they've said, we have power. We can do some things. And, you know, the city's strapped. It's trying to, like, work on bigger issues and get street lights and deal with crime. And so we'll take care of the park. So they released their own power, which then, you know, immediately got them into relationship with the existing power that didn't exist before. Lots of discussions about a master plan for the parks and where they wanted to go. nothing corrupt in it. Nothing. But if they were doing the same thing that public officials might do when they want to create something. Sitting down, organizing, figuring out what you got, who can do what, who's going to do what, when are we going to do it. They're releasing their power. So it wasn't just one-sided. It wasn't just trying to get existing power to act the way we wanted to. The saying Linsky used to use that a lot of organizers still use that I do like is that for people of certain values, it's about trying to change the world as it is into the world as we'd like it to be. Change the world as it is to be the world we'd like it to be. And as does anybody remember Frederick Douglass's quote about power? Frederick Douglass, the great advisor to Lincoln, abolitionist. Power never cedes anything voluntarily. So it was his message to people who thought the Southerners would just kind of eventually decide not to have slaves, to take your time. And it was his sort of moral support to his friend Abraham Lincoln that you might need to go to war over this. Power cedes nothing voluntarily. So if we want to move the world as it is, on a square, into the world as we want it to be, on a circle, we need power. Because this is not going to voluntarily decide to become that. This got to be a certain way for a reason. Now, not some big conspiracy, you know, or some guys at the North Pole controlling all the governments and everything, but through lots of little things, right? Every status quo is made up of lots of little things. So what are these things that create current situation, current status quo in your town?
Lack of money.
Money?
City government.
Government?
Resistance to change.
Okay, so that kind of a uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable. They like
change,
it.
Right? Kind of look like. We know what this is.
Better the devil you know.
Yeah, exactly. What else makes up your status quo? Okay, so some people don't care. Then think about your day, where you go in a day. Do you go by any schools, any hospitals, any companies? Do you have any of those things in your town? It's just home. What kinds of things do you have in your town?
Not in my backyard.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, so that's a, you know, apathy is sort of a negative passion. not near me. Yeah, you've got local institutions, schools, hospitals, churches. You've got lots of small businesses, usually, hopefully, in most places. Most of our towns have some larger institutions, they might be corporations or, yeah, universities, mega hospitals, you know, different kind of larger, and all they work together to create. Now, they don't go into a meeting, to a special place, and say, what status quo are we going to create? It's just all the various interactions between all these things create the world as it is. Now, does the university, as an institution, make a decision?
Yeah.
But how are decisions made in the university?
Board of Regents.
Board of Regents makes some. Who else makes decisions in universities?
Faculty make decisions.
Faculty make decisions. Student organizations make decisions. And universities they look like monoliths from the outside, but there are lots of, I'll bet all the things you've mentioned work before.
But when you're looking at each of these organizations, you're looking at self-interest.
Sure.
I think beyond organization, and sometimes there's been a group of the burghers of the town, I mean, some very influential families
yeah.
that are
Yeah, a few town stars, and they all know each other for the most part. I mean, that's kind of true. Or they hate each other when they so it's all people are involved, even the institutions, right? And yeah, they mostly act out of the self-interest of what they're there for. So if a school's self-interest is to educate children, they're gonna fight hard for that. Now within that, the faculty may have intense disagreements on exactly how they would want it to happen, if they have a school bond issue coming up where they think the money should be best spent. Yeah, that's an important piece, because we all have a self-interest, a thing that we're interested in, what we're passionate about. And people operate on that, but within what they've learned in terms of how it works. So power then ability to act becomes this fulcrum on the world as it is to the world as we might want it to be. So if we spent some time, we were one community, spent some time dreaming about how we would want it to be and what changes would be necessary, we would start talking about how we move this, you know, over here. So this is weighted a little more. How do you move this way? Which means we have to go with it if we want it to be power that reflects our values. Which means we have to come closer over here and engage with this. And to engage with this, we have to engage with these people. So influencing the status quo isn't getting the Yale Board of Regents to agree on something that will massively change in here. It's getting to know some key people there and bringing them into relationship with the community of New Haven so that they start to see this the way we see it. A lot of power comes from these relationships. You talked about the burgers or the stars of the town. Why? I mean, people have those. Most people live in a town where there's a few people you can think of that have a lot of influence, either whether they're elected or not, or maybe they decide who gets elected a lot. Mm-hmm. Why do they have so much influence?
Because they know people and they have good relationships, and when they need to get something done, they know who to call, and they have access.
Yep. That's primarily it. They may have got there through, you know, funding some campaigns or showing up some cocktail parties or that kind of thing. But generally, they spent time.
A lot of confidence.
And there's a lot of reason why, you know, people with wealth, not necessarily high incomes, but with wealth, are able to do this because they have some time. Because other people and money is making their money. So they have the time to invest and spend getting to know everybody and the relationships. And so they're able to influence what goes on here. With congregations, same thing, right? Mm-hmm. Somebody give me an example of how in your congregation maybe power was used to create something new.
Well, we had an interesting dynamic in the last year. We had an elderly gentleman that pretty much was the power structure, and he died suddenly. And it's been so interesting then to watch how new relationships have formed and the power structures branched out into big groups. It's amazing.
Yeah, a lot of times people with power occupy a lot of space, mm-hmm. right? Sometimes they're uncomfortable with that even. Mm-hmm. But the rest of us defer. And then when they are gone or move or die, yeah, right. Then we have to all refigure out our relationships. Mm-hmm. Right? Every coach knows this, right? Working with a team and there's a new player, it's not just one new player you have to integrate. You have to rearrange all the relationships because now every relationship is different. Other examples in your congregations where people came together to make something happen?
In our church, we have a pretty active social ministry committee, and they worked out an educational campaign that went on for about 18 months, I think. educating the congregation and the neighborhood about the possibility of inviting a tent city. We have a tent city 4 on the east side of Lake Washington.
A tent city what?
4. Yeah, there's tent city 3 in Seattle.
Oh, tent city 4, number 4, okay.
Yeah, number 4. And they rotate among churches on 90-day intervals, and it's first time tent city comes into a community, it's a bit difficult. But one of the key things is to work within the congregation, and like social ministry, developing relationships with all different groups within the church, so that when you actually come together to discuss it, and people then take a vote on what they want to do, you've already sort of agreed that it's got to be a significant majority. So you get 88% of the people say, yes, we're for this. And then because you've gone through that process, even the 10% who are not really excited about it are going to say, oh, well, it's, you know, it's what it is.
Right.
And so then, you know, Kent City comes to your community and we all benefit from it. And it's been a wonderful experience for our church, and they've been there 3 times now.
Is that homeless?
Yeah, they're homeless people, and it's for men, adult men and women. It's one of the few places where couples can stay together. They can keep their belongings. They can develop within themselves a community. They elect an executive board amongst themselves. They have rigid rules. And for many of them, it's the first time they've had an opportunity to have power in the sense that they are in a position where they are on the executive board or whatever it is. And it's been an amazing thing to watch them develop that community in that homeless environment.
Now that's really cool. But you were saying that then, so your congregation created some power to create the tent city through a lot of conversation.
Yes. It means going and knocking on doors of your neighbors. It means sitting in their kitchens having coffee,
right.
Having public meetings so they can come in and meet the potential neighbors and ask the questions, have their concerns heard and listened to.
So there's a power that comes from listening to people's self-interest. So when I was doing, you know, more kind of traditional hard community organizing in Chicago, we would analyze which public official can influence the situation we're trying to change. Figured that out, we learned everything we could about that person and about their self-interest so that we could influence them to rearrange some of their relationships to move that neighborhood along the way. Not easy. Not easy. Certainly a situation like that's not easy. But I'm highlighting this because it's a different way of achieving and implementing power. It's relational, as opposed to based on credential. So your congressman has power because he has a credential. He earned it by getting elected and getting the most people to vote for him, but that's where his power comes from. And whereas in communities, we can release all kinds of power that's latent by listening to self-interest and figuring out how to rearrange existing self-interests. If we're clear on what this is, there are people who run around and do this just because. You know, they want to be the leader or something. Have you seen that before? It's kind of messy. There's always one in a church. There's always one in a church who's just always talking to people and then telling people about other people and feels like they're powerful, and it just makes a mess of things. You don't really get anything done here. So it does require, like you described in your congregation, you had some conversation on what that vision was going to be before you went and knocked on doors. Okay. So I want to show you one other thing, and then I want you guys to about how you can do this at home. So in community development, a lot of times we draw what we call the resident power ladder. It's a triangle. I have no idea why we call it a ladder. In my PowerPoint, I actually have a little ladder up there because it was just a different button. At the most basic level, residents of a community, members of a congregation, they're function is as, I'm doing the spelling in. As recipients. So move in, somebody picks up your garbage, you receive that service, turn on the faucet, water comes out, you receive that service, go to church, somebody gives a sermon, somebody's picked up the hymns. Okay. So we receive stuff, it's very passive. At the next level, residents or members of a congregation are information sources. This is the community input meeting. Has anyone been to one of those in town, right, where they have a meeting about something and you go and people kind of say what they think? And yeah, when I got my, is anybody here out there do urban planning or any kind of, when I got my master's in urban planning, we actually had part of a course dedicated on how to run those meetings in a way that convinced everybody that the idea you all had drawn back up in the shop was the one they liked. And that the comments that people said that didn't like it, how you could sort of shuffle them out and marginalize them. They actually teach you that. Which was great, because I was in planning school to learn how to community organize against the planners, so I didn't they had none at the time. Information sources, which is also not a bad thing. I mean, in a congregational meeting, you might have some pre-meetings so that people get some information about maybe a stewardship campaign, but and also an opportunity to say where they would like it to go. So that's a different level than just receiving services, right? Next level is as participants. So you can see the power here is going up, right? It doesn't take much power to be here. It's a little more. Here again, that's not something to say. But this is a whole different level, participants. Mm-hmm. You're actually actively participating in. On the worship committee, helping pick the hymns that are being used. Maybe you attend the park planning commission meetings. Maybe you're the community that decides you're going to go prepare the benches and paint the bathrooms. You're actively participating in what's going on, which increases the amount of influence you have. And then at the top is control. You or the group you're with actually control the outcome. The sort of irony of American society is American democracy was created in some sense that this would be how people participated, that they would come together, make decisions, make things happen. And we've become society of recipients. We usually like to say that about poor people, that they're just taking handouts. But we can just have a quick discussion about highways or farm subsidies and find out very quickly that lots and lots and lots of people, all of us, are receiving stuff. And somewhere in there, we decided that what we would do is let institutions do a lot of this stuff for us. So we have institutions, we've given them the power to raise our children. We've given them the power to define and decide about public safety. So go to any law enforcement, gathering, but any gathering of police chiefs in this country. And you know what they will tell you the most important determinant of public safety is?
It's not going to be civilian review reports.
Civilian review boards.
Parents?
We're just guns?
No.
No?
Participation by the people that do it.
Partly. Yeah. A lot of them like it, you know, when the community's helping out, calling, you know, when they see something suspicious.
School system.
A lot of them will say preschool. A lot of them will say universal preschool would solve the gang problem. Take a while, but that's been said many, many times by big city police chiefs. They will say, and the research will back them, that the biggest determinant of public safety is the level of connectedness of the people who live in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. How many and how well people love their neighbors. How well they know who belongs, who doesn't. Who's 90% of the time about business that's legitimate and who you need to keep an eye on. And that will cut across income ranges. So we've handed that over, and so when we have a crime problem, what do we first ask to happen?
More police.
More police officers. And then what do the police officers then come do? They come teach us how to have neighborhood watches and get to know our neighbors.
That's right.
So we've taken something we could control, for the most part. I mean, you can't control that. You know, wacky guy with a shotgun, drug dealer, you know, it's trying to establish a business. But a lot of what we can control, and we said, we would like to pay you, institution of the police department, to help us just receive that. Can you give us safety? And then we get in fights about how much taxes we should pay. When we haven't really had the discussion of what do we want to buy with our taxes. Because we gave up our power. The reason I wanted to do this workshop here at Colton was because I firmly believe that churches are the place where power can be reclaimed as a community tradition that a community can be proud of and not have to first think of it as a corrupt CEO or a politician full of lobbyist money. The person who's always inspired me has said, power at its best is love implementing, i.e. acting, ability to act, the demands of justice. Anyone know who said that? The person also said, love without power is anemic. Yeah. Martin Luther King Jr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Who did his PhD on Paul Tillich. He's a theologian. And came out with most of his writings about power tie right back to either this statement or the statement that love without power is anemic, meaning unable to act. And that's true in personal relationships too, right? If you love somebody but you don't have the ability to show them, and that's there's a whole movie industry of heartbreaking stories around that. Aren't all those Nicholas Sparks books like that? It's not his formula. Right? So it becomes anemic, and that, you know, when we think of it in love stories, that's tragic, but think of it in the story of a community, of a people. So if love's anemic, I'm really having a hard time doing a lot of the stuff Jesus asked us about. One of the pieces he points out that goes back to the releasing power instead of empowering is the story of the healing of the guy who was by the pool. sitting there forever. Yeah. And he Jesus was coming by, and he scooted over there, and he said, you know, heal me. What did Jesus tell him? Chris said, go get in the pool and then get out and walk. He didn't just heal him right then. He said, you can do this. Now, there's no question that the man was affected by his interaction with Jesus and all of a sudden realized what he could do. He had been sitting by the side of the pool, the healing pool.
The other thing I like about that story is the reason he couldn't get in because he didn't have any friends or helpers to put him in, letting the other people to him.
Yep. Nobody was putting him in. So Jesus said, just get in. You got yourself over here to ask me for help. So some of you may remember Francis Moore LePay, Diet for a Small Planet. This is a staple I've held in for years. She wasn't just a cook, but not really a cook. She wrote that to help communities eat well with less impact on the earth. She's actually just come out with a newer book. It's featured in Yes Magazine, which Holden gets. And this is a graphic from that article. And it was funny because it caught my eye. I just saw it actually down at the B&B, the Holden B&B. And the title of the article is Why Power is Not a Dirty Word, which is what I thought I'd name the session, but I think I said it's not a four-letter word. She's just such a gracious writer that it's worth reading the article and like the article and find her book. But I thought this was a really good summary of a lot of the things that I was going to talk about and an exercise I wanted to do with you in here. What I'd like to do is get people in groups of three or four, and preferably if you came with somebody, a spouse or something, to be in different groups. And first, go around and identify something you're part of that has power. It may be your congregation, it may be a neighborhood association, it may be some other kind of group, maybe a civic club, rotary club, something like that, but something you're part of that has power. And then, after you've each explained what that is to each other and kind of the nature of the power, take a look at this sheet and pick one of the, on the left-hand side, one of these traditional definitions of power, and on the right-hand side, sort of what it could be. And help each other think about how the thing you're part of that has power might be able to be more or might be able to use and create and release more power by acting in ways that are listed on the right-hand side of the column. We'll go kind of fast because we want to hear what some of you say. So your first job is to go around groups of three or four and name a group you're part of that has some power and what that is. And then the second is to share with each other where in this right-hand column you think it could do more. And I encourage you, if you can, if you're part of a faith community or congregation, to think about that. That's what a lot of us do. Okay, yeah, go. We'll give you about 8 minutes for this.
Sure.
No. Oh, absolutely.
That looks like it could be
painful. No.
Yeah.
wants to go down.
So we're just kind of.
Okay, we have to stop you for a second. Sorry. Hopefully you'll see each other around the village and continue the conversation. But I wanted to hear real quick, what kinds of organizations or groups did you mention?
Church
congregations?
Rotary.
What are you guys? What kind of groups did you mention?
We're talking about neighborhood associations.
Neighborhood associations, absolutely.
Churches.
Corporations, homeowners association.
Church-related things. Council.
Council, okay. Yeah, which is their own group. Great. And what kinds of things did you end up talking about in terms of this right-hand column? Anybody want to share any of the conversations you had about how those groups can reframe power in a more life-giving way than a suppressive way?
Well, for ours, what we've done at our congregation is there's so many immediate things that we've had to pay attention to, and we had what was called the Visioning Summit, where it's like, who do we think we are, and what are we going to do, and what are our core values? And then beyond that, we had, really, where would we like to go, or what kind of a community would we like to be? And but it's always back to a lot of the day-to-day, mm-hmm. week by week.
Right.
I'm also on the finance committee, so that also.
But so you've taken the time to do some of this expanding vision of what you want to be to each other. Big step. Great.
The example here, if I can use yours, was corporate relations. A group of engineers went on strike and chose to limit their power and stop when they'd achieved their original goals, came back to the table for the sake of the relationship. And I like that.
So investing a lot in the relationships, mm-hmm. to move things along. And did that help solve the conflict or an issue?
It solved the immediate,
mm-hmm.
problem, which was everything was top down and
right.
bottom up. But they're still suspicious of this bottom up stuff.
But it sounds like you, by doing sort of modified strike and then coming back to the table to engage in relationship, you change the conversation.
Yeah.
And one that sounds like it's moving more collaboratively than it
yeah,
was before.
They didn't really understand the power that we had.
Right. Yeah. So you release some of your power, changes the conversation.
Right.
Definitely changes the conversation. All right. How about over here?
Well, we talked about neighborhood associations, and in my community, for example, where every neighborhood has an independent association. The purpose is the kind of improvement of community and creating a sense of community within the neighborhood, but also developing relationships with the people in the city, inviting them to your meetings, getting to know who the director of planning is, having city manager come over, come out and talk to you about what's going on in the city, so you have a feeling of connectedness with the people who are in the city hall, let's say. You know,
yeah.
And have the policeman who has that precinct to come on out and answer any questions or talk to you about we're having this trouble with car problems, and this is what you really need to do and call me. And that puts a face to the folks at City Hall.
No, that's really good. A lot of neighborhood associations go, if you go down this list, will go to intimidating and scary, you know, show up at City Hall and scream, which is also a controlling issue, trying to change, leaving the dynamics and the status quo in place, just changing who's in charge of it.
Mm-hmm.
conversations and being collaborative and seeing what might come of that.
Well, once you start going to a neighborhood association, if you don't show up at the next meeting, you could be the chairman. And three people can control
that's
the
neighborhood. That's a whole
other thing. Three people can control the neighborhood
association. I do a whole workshop on
if you let three people control them.
How to have a real neighborhood association. Do you guys have anything you want?
Sure. That's right.
I think the primary conversation was very comfortable to the first one over here, dealing with vision and mission and ministry and how is that put together as God calling and how is that moved out in relationships. Is that most?
Yeah. Sounds like community boy.
So, I mean, I would actually, Paul and Jeannie at the staff meeting, I was going to compliment them. They've created this week where the topics have been power, sex, and international intrigue. We didn't know that. They didn't tell us it was coming. But to sort of summarize what I hope came across in this session, generally power comes from these three sources: credentials or tradition. So, there might be a long tradition in the community, or somebody might have the credentials to do something. So if you're in Portland and you're homeless and you're determined to be possibly harmful to yourself, my sister can commit you to a hospital against your will. Because she has this credential and this authority granted to her by the police department in the city and all kinds of social work organizations. The other big one, I didn't spend a lot of kids' ones, dollars, money, which is just really another word for control of resources, right? So a lot of power can come from that. Some of us have this maybe a little bit in part of our lives, small part, maybe at our work, maybe at our church, but have a hard time using that to influence our whole neighborhood and community. A few of us have this. The third source is what all of us can have, which is relationships. It's a huge source of power, huge source. Which is why people who help work with communities or with congregations to strengthen their power, release their power, and implement the demands of justice that we talked about. Talk about creating a web of relationships. So you have a bunch of individuals, that's really these guys, these things can really do what they want in the face of that. But you start connecting these people, each other, across cultures, jobs, incomes, neighborhoods, faith traditions, and you get a web in the sense of that, you know, that game where you throw a rope around and everyone holds it and then pulls tight on it and the person can lay in the middle. And even though everyone's just using two fingers, you're holding the person up. The same dynamic happens in communities when you create this web of relationships. There's quite a bit of power there. How you do that, we're going to talk about more tomorrow, but just in case, you're not coming tomorrow. Is through a tool that we call learning conversations, a one-on-ones, where you sit down and listen to people, what they dream about, what they care about, what their concerns are, and most importantly, what their gifts are, what they have to contribute, so that they can remember that power ladder, so they can start operating up here instead of an interview where you're just trying to find out a bunch of stuff so they can receive things. And when you organize a congregation, when you do it strategically, methodologically, a set of learning conversations with lots of people in the church and possibly in the neighborhood around, it's often called a listening campaign. Mm-hmm. It's a technique used often in stewardship campaigns. Drives me crazy because everyone thinks that when somebody from church wants to come and sit down and talk with you, it's going to be about money. A good listening campaign is about who are you? What do you care about? How do you want to be involved? What do you see? Remember that world as we'd like it to see? How would you like, what's the world of our church as you'd like to see it? What's the world of our neighborhood as you'd like to see it? What's the world of our community or city as you'd like to see it? And then you come back together and you look where things are in common and you put people who care about the same things together so they can start talking and working on that. And from that actually comes power.
tomorrow I'll show examples and, of that and how to do those. And I'll let you know the books that I've been relying on so that if you aren't coming tomorrow or want to read more on this, this one, The Abundant Community by John McKnight and Peter Block, called Awakening the Power of Families and Neighborhoods, especially if you're interested in that whole thing where institutions sort of take control of a lot of stuff, and then how different communities are to the point that it's just stretching the institutions beyond what they were created to do. So how communities are creating power to take some of that back and then also make the institutions stronger and more useful to their original mission. Neighborhood Power, Building Community Seattle Way, not just in Holden, but this is a model used all over the world, actually. And When People Care Enough to Act by Mike Green and Henry Moore. Has a whole template and tools and resources on how to do these learning conversations. And Mike Green's website, which is just something like mikegreen.org or mikebgreen.org, you'll find it quick. Put in Mike Green and asset-based community development, you'll find it has all the handouts on his website for free. And loves for congregations to use them. So those are some resources if you want to work more with this concept. Thanks for coming and being brave enough to engage in power tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.